All right, back, episode 199.
Unimaginable.
Yeah, so close.
Yes, yes.
Almost there.
Stumbling to glory.
Yeah. But speaking of magic twos, there's some twos in the news.
Twos in the news.
Yeah. Should we talk about the change breach?
Yes. For those of you who are listening to this much distant future or who just aren't that much aware of it, Change Healthcare is the most recent victim of a resurgence and attack by, I'm going to say it's Alf V. I don't know how they pronounce it, but the black cat guys.
Alfiv?
Is that the guy? Alfiv.
Either we're covered. It's either one exactly. Way or the other.
Or Alf 5.
Oh.
Maybe, yeah. Anyway, so they attacked, they had a campaign against Change Healthcare, which some of you may know is this, a lot of it is the former WebMD, currently owned by United Healthcare. And the result of it is that really good people who are doctors and patients are being negatively affected. It's a really big deal, and I think that's a great idea. Let's talk about that.
Yeah. Okay. So back to the story. Mm. Change Healthcare announced they had some issues with ransomware. And long story short, they paid Alf V, otherwise known as Black Cat.
Yeah, who call him Black Cat? That's Black Cat. Easier. Yeah.
$22 million for the decryption key and to give their data back or expunge it.
I think that was the theory. Yeah, and just for the audience's perspective, the result of this attack was, for those of you who don't know what they do, Change is a really big payer, right? They relate when we go for healthcare to when our doctor gets paid or when the pharmacy, you know, gets money for the drugs that we need. And them being down has caused a massive amount of hardship, both for healthcare providers who aren't getting paid and for people who need their medicines, because when you go to the pharmacy and you say, hey, I need my drug, and they say, it's usually $10 because I'm insured, and they say, no, it's $1,000 now because we can't tell if you're insured or not, it's introducing some hardship.
Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, and I would imagine for most people it's like, well, if you can pay, just pay the full amount, and then you'll like file a claim with your insurance company.
Yeah, I mean, and it's so bad. I mean, the CMS, which is the government's sort of, here's how you get paid for your healthcare stuff, insurance. CMS has said that they're forwarding money. They're giving advance money up to 1 month of the typical billings for clinics and stuff so that they have enough money to continue to operate while they try to figure out how they're going to get paid.
Yeah, yeah.
So not only is this terrible, but now the federal government is getting involved to support it because they have to rescue these organizations.
Yeah. Yeah, it's crazy stuff. And super unfortunate too. Yeah. And it's, I mean, just myself and my example, I think of like any family members or acquaintances who are in this position where they are in need of prescriptions.
Right on.
They're also unable to work.
Yikes. And the model, and again, Black Cat's been around for a long time. They were recently completely dissolved with never a chance of coming back almost a month ago. In a joint effort between U.S. and U.K. law enforcement. It was pretty widely publicized that there was a combination of attacks against them to knock them down and take the sites offline. And there was a rumor that they were going to strike back, particularly at healthcare. So I think that's another interesting sort of sideline.
Yeah, so if we can maybe pull back just a second.
Sure.
How does Black Hat work?
It's number one, it's ransomware as a service. Right, so the software that's developed and served up through the platform is mainly the once I get on the system, once I have an inroad onto the system, this is what does the expression of the virality. This is where you do the billing. This is what sends up the horrible screens. This is what tells all the bad things that's happening. They sell through an affiliate model. So affiliates go to the ransomware as a service platform from Black Hat and say, hey, let me license some of this, and say, great, you get it on there and we'll split with you. And the idea is that the affiliate gets a chunk, the Black Cat organizers, people who run it, the operators, get a chunk, but it's the responsibility of the affiliate to do the social engineering or the smishing attack or whatever they want to do to get the credentials that allow them to get in that first system, which then gets exploited by the Black Cat ransomware.
Yeah, which is a clever but interesting model, right? So in this case, they had an affiliate I think his name was published in one of the Krebs reports. I don't have it right in front of me. But obviously it was a pseudonym.
Yep.
They're saying that this individual did their part as an affiliate, got Black Hat's platform installed, was able to basically encrypt their whole network, change paid.
Steal all the private information too, not just the crypto, yeah.
Yep. Okay, thank you. So encrypted and then took the information on top of it.
Yep.
So two things. And then changed it. Okay, we're going to pay. They pay $22 million, but it goes to Black Hat.
Mm-hmm.
And Black Hat does not give any dollars to this person, the affiliate.
Yep.
And then promise says, we're out of it. Actually, let me take it back. So money goes into Black Hat. Black Hat isn't sharing any of the money with the affiliate. And it's the affiliate who basically blows the whistle, right?
Yeah. And there is some back and forth in the press where Black Hat's like, we're a serious company. We're trying to pay them, but we have some technical difficulties. So, I mean, there really is this whole back and forth. I mean, they volunteered to one of the reporters, might have been the Telegraph. We'll show you the chat logs. We're trying to resolve this so our affiliate gets paid. I mean, it's kind of surreal, right?
Yeah. Honor
among thieves, right? But they're like, we promise. But now, evidently, in the most recent reporting, as of sort of today, which is whenever today is, that they have said, we can't figure this out. We're out of business. And we've sold the software, the platform software, to somebody else. So, you know, Black Hat will be soon at a theater near you, but we're no longer the cinema of choice.
Yeah. Trust us. We're a very reputable business. We're trying to do what's right for everybody.
Yeah, well, and I love the fact you bring up the affiliate blowing the whistle because, I mean, the biggest concern for me as far as that goes is not the sadness of this gentle affiliate not getting paid. It's the fact that they still have all the private information. The affiliate has the info, right? While the administration of the funds and what have you are being done by the platform, the actual data is living with the affiliate, who's gotten nothing except frustration at this point in time.
What do you speculate the odds are at some point the affiliate doesn't get paid, just says, hey, I still have your data?
I can imagine the price for whoever paid for the ransomware platform could have just gone up, right? Because you can imagine somebody else reinstitutes the platform and this person still says, I still have all the information. You could imagine that Black Hat 2, son of Black Hat, right, comes back and says, by the way, Change Health, sorry about that. New ownership, you're going to have to pay for it again.
Yeah, new ownership.
Right? I mean, I don't know what happens, but, I don't know what the recourse is for the affiliate except to try to find a way to drag something out of Change above and beyond the other 22.
Yeah. What do you speculate happened there? A month ago they were out of business, right?
Yeah. I think that more damage was probably done during the operation by the governmental law enforcement entities that maybe destabilized what was happening a little bit. We saw this, if you remember, Fulton County got hit, similar sort of thing. And then the takedown happened and then suddenly their name disappeared. And then like 5 minutes later, the group came back and said, no, we still have their data. And everybody's sort of like, yeah, no, you don't really. And they're like, yeah, sorry. And then they sort of moved on. And so I think that maybe there was some disruption to the infrastructure that supported it in a way that was more damaging than people may have known. And so software is a fickle mistress. It really is, right? And so I can imagine just one thing going a little bit sideways, and it didn't work the way it was supposed to work anymore. And so even if they, I mean, that's a pretty amazing business when you just write software and somebody takes it and gives you most of the money back.
I think they call that channel programs.
Yeah. Well, there you have it. But I guess that's true because they actually do find a way to close the deal.
Yeah.
Manner speaking, yeah. But I can't imagine that they'd sort of declare themselves out of business, right? Unless there was something fundamentally wrong with the infrastructure and it needed repair. So even if they come back with it later under a new name, my guess is maybe they're going to the back office and retooling or something.
Yeah. My idea, and this is 100% speculation.
You heard it here first.
I have no facts, nothing to support this. It's just my view on the world. Is that a month ago, there was a big disruptive event
right with
Black Hat, right? And we all know that when these groups have an event with law enforcement, they are disrupted and creates an opportunity for splinter cells, right? So here's my speculation, is that the person who receives the funds or the small group that received the funds received them as a bluebird, right? They're operating as a splinter cell, trying to figure out what to do next. They weren't necessarily directly wrapped up in the original, like, FBI. It was the FBI and UK, right? Joint takedown. And all of a sudden, I had this $22 million bluebird come in and basically saw it as an opportunity to be like, oof, you can catch me on a beach somewhere. And then maybe they were thinking that the money goes in. Everybody's seen the news that Black Hat is out of business, ostensibly out of business, right? And be like, maybe there's no expectation that anybody's going to come looking for the money, right? And so, like, we'll just take it, keep our heads down, and maybe no one says anything. But now here they are. Now this person's blown the whistle. Any hopes of resurgence, not going to be the case, because they're going to be losing affiliates because none of the affiliates trust them, right?
Truth.
And it's like, and I'm not saying there's any ties to, like Uber, but if you ever seen the movie, like, Super Pumped on Netflix, same thing, right? There's a heavy reliance on, like, your affiliate network, your network of drivers in order to make this thing go. But the moment you, like, you slight any of them and word gets out, the whole thing can fall apart pretty quick. And so that's my theory, is that this isn't the official Black Hat. They're dealing with the splinter cell.
Very interesting. I never had that thought, but it makes perfect sense. And that is the model, too, for the growth of these organizations. I remember, I'm going to say it was like 97 or 98, this guy named Steve Romig at Ohio State. They actually installed sniffers and watched the traffic. It was like one of these really, really early, almost biological examinations of hacker groups. And there the model was, I remember him describing it, that they would come together, they'd learn all their stuff from one another, they'd grow together, and then whoever the leader was would turn, I think he said, like, the age is 25. Somebody turns 25, and the monetization wasn't as big a deal back then. It was all hacktivism, what have you. But they turn 25, and they're like, oh, holy shit, I can go to prison for this. And they're out, and they leave, and whoever the top two are split because they can't agree who's going to be the boss. And then now I have two cells, and this just goes on and on and on and on. Steve, who's probably like an incredibly successful business person somewhere, who at the time was watching this as a college administrator of all this stuff going down, I just thought it was a really interesting, very organic, you know, growth phase. So your model makes perfect sense. If that is a splinter cell, those who hung around and remained had access to what they needed to, were they had the right access key at the right time. They got a $22 million bluebird.
Yeah.
And they didn't have enough of a functioning system to actually pay the person off and keep running the service. That is a very practical story.
Yeah, I'm going to stick with it. I like it.
I like it too. Yeah. Hopefully that'll put sort of a, maybe that'll put some hesitation in affiliates going to these ransomware as a service platforms. Because these platforms are just killers, right? When you have, when you're basically providing a weapon that anybody can monetize, and we know how many credentials, stolen credentials exist everywhere, right?
Yeah.
And we know how straightforward it is through smishing or phishing or any kind of social engineering to get somebody to make a mistake, to let me get something on their system. So the affiliates are doing sort of the easier, technically, but more difficult, human-wise, bit to get the access. When these platforms exist to give them a way to monetize that effort, at really low effort from their perspective, because they didn't have to write the code, I think that's one of the most dangerous things in the industry these days.
Yeah. The whole thing is a little bit of a paradox to me, in the sense where it's like, you're doing this very, like, dishonest and unethical thing, but you have to run it in an ethical way in order to keep it working.
Yeah.
It's a pretty interesting comparison.
But you made mention when we were talking earlier, just sort of about the quality of the software that they're putting out there and the updates and the customer success and what have you.
Yeah. Let's talk about that for a second. So, like, can you imagine if, like, corporate America or corporate whatever ran their development operations like the same way? It's like, this is a very highly efficient and highly scalable model. Not the affiliate piece, but, like, how they've written a piece of software that can be so easily disseminated.
Absolutely. Super resilient.
Yeah. And the model just works. And unfortunately, it works. But you imagine if we developed corporate apps the same way? Like, how like how efficient corporate America would be.
Right on. And if you think about the requirements, right? So where enterprises purchase software, organizations purchase software because they want to get something done, great. So they don't look too deeply into necessarily the cybersecurity component of it, right? But these organizations, they can't afford to write it in a way that it's going to crash and leak their secrets. They can't write it in such a way that it can be reverse engineered so you can see how it works so I can simply turn it off and write a decryptor for it. So the quality requirements, the security, the non-tamper bits of it, I think are probably better because the customer demands it, right? The customer of the developer. So the developer is like me or you were writing software and the boss is like, and you got to write it this way. It can never crash. It can never have input validation. It can never leak data because hell, the cops are going to be chasing us, right? If you start, you know, dropping breadcrumbs like Hansel and Gretel, they're going to find us.
Yeah.
Whereas regular software, it's mainly about the output, right? It's the goal at the end of the day. So you're right. It's a different level of requirement for consistency and quality, yeah. Resilience.
It really is fascinating to me how quickly they can spin this up. And like, think about how much our industry spends in like billions of dollars to prevent these things from happening.
Oh yeah.
And they're still getting around it.
No, that's so not helping.
Yeah. My goodness. So one thing I did want to bring up to you was this, the idea that, like paying these groups, Black Hat, others, have been tied to a violation of U.S. Treasury law in OFAC, which is, I don't hear a lot of people talking about it. But the fact of paying some of these ransom could actually also be a federal crime, which is like, you're kind of like stuck between like a very large rock and a very hard place.
I mean, it's hard. So if anybody wants to look it up, that's the Office of Foreign Asset Control, currency, something like that.
Yep. Office of Foreign Assets Control.
Cool. Foreign Assets Control. And so the idea here is that if you're giving money to terrorist organizations, that's a bad thing. I find this is an amazing conundrum, right? And I think we have to, we were talking a little bit before the show, whether or not the country of ownership, where the infrastructure is, does that make a difference, right? So if they say they're in Denmark, but it appears that they were backed by a country which is presumed to have terrorist ties or what have you, is that okay? I was saying to Justin a little bit earlier before the show, I think there was actually a message by somebody from Black Hat, not this time, but a while ago, that they had moved their headquarters. And this is just about stealing money. This has nothing to do with terrorism. And it was like, it was so bald, right? It was just like, this is just about stealing money. It's not about terrorism, as though they were talking to OFAC.
Yeah, yeah.
You know? But I don't know. I wonder and I worry about what that means. Like, I'm looking at the damage that we're hearing about being caused for healthcare providers and patients. And maybe if, I'm sure that the team at Change was not anxious to give away $22 million, right? So my guess is the other option was super poor, right? And very, very bad for patients and healthcare providers. So is it really appropriate to say you can't pay to get out of this when the damage could cost lives?
It's a tough thing. And I mean, I certainly have my opinions on it. And I know whoever's listening to this has probably got their own views of the world as well. But I don't know. It's kind of like six of one, half dozen of the other, you know? And I don't know.
See, ordinarily, right, we think about it like kidnapping. You know, if you reward the criminal, then it encourages other people to do it. The impact of that style of horrendous crime is so limited to an individual. And we're literally talking about tens of millions of people being affected by this one, right? If you do like a dollar per person, right? It's just not that much, you know, to get them the healthcare that they need, the drugs that keep them alive or support their children or what have you. I just find this a really problematic space. And to me, what it really drives is a re-examination of how these things happen. And I don't mean let's pretend that users won't click on the wrong thing or that I can't be fooled. I'm sure I can be, right, by a clever social engineering attack, right? It's there's something about the system, right? The typical black cat path is through like customer support, right? Why is it that a customer support machine is built in such a way that it can spread viral software? Why is a network laid out, or why doesn't the network recognize it's bad? Is there a fundamental architectural problem with the way that we currently conceive of computing that has to be addressed? And this is something that I think about all the time, right? Do we have to rethink software, hardware, all of it in order to address these problems? Because they're only getting worse. And we've had the conversation, it's only going to get worse as AI writes more code.
Yeah, I think that's true. But I think the question would then come up is, you take this case, or maybe even you total up all the ransomware payments made from this point to the beginning of the calendar year, compare that to the cost to basically retrofit all systems to be less risky, right? And under your model, it's like that'd be an interesting like actuarial calculation.
Yeah, I'd like to see them do it on a going forward basis. Because my problem is, you know, 30 years ago, I'm like, wow, this is horrible. It's going to get worse. And I'm not like Nostradamus. I mean, it was obvious, right? But I promise you, it's going to get worse again unless we decide to stop trying to treat architectural problems with software Band-Aid solutions, right? Our entire industry of security is mainly software Band-Aids, right? We are symptomatic relief. We are not fixing the core of the problem, which is, how is it possible for one infected system to take out an entire healthcare company? That's an architectural problem. And so what we should be thinking about is, all right, the next time we buy deployments in 2030 or whatever, it has to behave a certain way. To your question earlier about why is there such high quality and resilience? You know, it's amazing the quality and resilience of the ransomware code.
Yeah.
Maybe we actually ask them to give us some requirements we can apply it to regular code as well.
Yeah, come teach us how to do better development. Yeah, it's interesting.
Cool.
All right. Well, this is good. So I guess for those listening, if you're concerned about OFAC and FinCEN's law, FinCEN is the Financial Crimes Enforcement Network. I think that's what FinCEN is. We'll put some links in the show notes. But I think the main thing here is, like, as people do tabletop exercises, which you're supposed to be doing annually,
right on,
part of your incident response plan, ask the question, in the event that you get hit with ransomware and you're forced to make a payment, forced with making the payment, or forced with having the potential of having to deal with OFAC or FinCEN, how would you play? But more importantly, what's the role of your attorneys,
right on,
and your insurance provider and your data breach coaches to kind of help inform some of that? And it'd be good to kind of have some of that ironed out.
Yeah, I think that's brilliant, because you're never going to know where the affiliate's coming from. Right, the affiliate could be in any one of a dozen nations that are probably on the list of nations you can't trade with, right? Yeah. So I think that's a brilliant point to make.
Anything else on this one?
Not for me.
I think we hit one out of the park. Okay, so if you're listening to this now, you're still listening here, thank you for listening. Please like and share with your friends. But we have our 200th episode coming up.
Woohoo, right around the corner.
Super exciting. But more importantly, if you have questions for the mailbag, interesting topics you'd like Jack and I to cover during our 200th episode, I won't give away too much right now. please send them our way as pwned@newharborsecurity.com, and we'll get you on the next episode.